What I saw was over the last couple of days is a team that's becoming a team. Guys that are competing extremely hard. We got some guys that can make some plays on offense, defense, and I believe in special teams. And I just think we got to keep growing, keep working, and paying attention to detail. But I thought it was a good effort by our guys.
It's quiet in Berea today, as it's an off day for the Cleveland Browns, but it was a busy, busy weekend as far as leaning towards Friday night's first preseason game against the Green Bay Packers. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Dog Pound Report. I'm Andy Baskin. Nathan Zagura is here. Matt Wilhelm is here. And yesterday, you were in the house that Wilhelm built.
That's right.
Ohio State. Forget
That's
about the house that Woody built, the house that Wilhelm built. How was the scrimmage yesterday?
You know, it was really good. I didn't really know what to expect going into it after that intense practice we had here in Berea Friday night where there was a lot of live action, but they basically went through a game, moved the ball. First team offense looked very good. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But I thought it was just a cool atmosphere, over 40,000 people in attendance to see the Browns put on a practice.
It definitely was. And what I loved was obviously the opportunity to get down on the field, you know, rub elbows with Hugh Jackson before the scrimmage. And I also had an opportunity to catch up with Sashi Brown and Andrew Berry and just to ask them the expectations of after last, you know, the Friday night, you know, heavy live scrimmage. What are their expectations of yesterday at the Orange and Brown scrimmage? And it was a crisp, technically scheme sound practice, and I thought we saw that out of both the offense and the defense,
especially coming off of Friday night, because it was hot and heavy out here. The fans loved it. Let's take a look back yesterday, and here's what they had to say after the big scrimmage in Columbus.
I mean, it's cool, you know. College football was a very fun time for everybody that's in the pros now, so you get to come back to a stadium like this with in a place that's such as historic as Ohio State. It's pretty cool.
All right, how important was it to take the show on the road yesterday? I think you learned a little bit. It's almost like taking a group of people that work together off-site to kind of have a little bit of a talk. But they needed yesterday, didn't they?
I thought it was very good for them because, look, you're going to start five of your first seven games on the road. We'll also have another tune-up when we go down to Tampa with that week of joint practices. But I thought it was just good for them to get in that environment, be in front of a big crowd, kind of get going. And, again, you're trying to figure out what you've got with this football team. And to show the poise that they did out there, I thought was good to see.
Absolutely. And I've always said, you know, I know I was, and I know that these players are too. You're creatures of habit. And when you get accustomed to Berea, you know, where to eat lunch and where to go and what to do, and then when you coach can change that schedule and you're forced to have a walkthrough at a different time. On Friday, they had that big break, and then they have to come out and bring it on Friday night. They have to wake up early. They have to jump on a bus, get down to Columbus. So a lot of little different intangibles that forces this team to kind of think and perform on the run.
And a big day for Terrell Pryor yesterday.
A huge day, and it was really cool yesterday. We did a live broadcast of the Orange and Brown scrimmage, and to have Terrell Pryor literally come off the field. He had the last play, a walk-off 75-yard touchdown from Josh McCown, and then join us on the air. You could tell it meant something to him. He had been banned from Ohio State for 5 years. That ended. He was back. Six catches on the day, well over 100 yards, two touchdowns. And this is a guy that's coming into his own as a wide receiver, and I thought yesterday was really his big day. Friday night belonged to Corey Coleman. Saturday belonged to Terrell Pryor.
It definitely did. And you could even see, as Terrell, you know, talked to us about, you know, that was Corey's day, and then it's my day. You know, they're really not making mention of anybody else. So those are the two guys that are making all the plays. And the one thing that exuded through Terrell Pryor, I thought, in the few seconds that we spent with him, he's humble. And he's ready to work, and he understands that making that position change is not easy, and he's diving in the work necessary to make this football team and make a difference for the Cleveland Browns.
And I just want to say one thing. The credit that he gets for the hard work that he's done to go from where he was last year to this year, it's amazing. So tip of the cap to him. But the way that this group as a whole has developed from OTAs till now is incredible, and I think Al Saunders, they always mention him. Every single receiver mentions him. Terrell Pryor did yesterday. Gets a lot of credit with his experience for getting these guys where they are right now, where it looks like we've got the best wide receiving core we've had in years.
All right, I'm going to ask you this. Why is Terrell Pryor better today than he was when he walked off the field at the end of the season last year?
Because I think it just takes time. And, Matt, you know this. We talked about it last year on CBD. You can't just pick up being a wide receiver. There's so many technical aspects, the releases against press coverage. And I think he's had the opportunity now and the time and the reps to get that down because the guy's an incredible athlete, but it's the technical aspects of being a receiver that are now becoming second nature.
It is. A, he's healthy, so he's out there. And then B, we saw him go out a little bit, you know, in shells and be a little tentative. Once the pads came on, we saw the physicality of Terrell Pryor really paying off.
All right, you talked about the pads coming on. The pads came on over the weekend, and here's what Hugh Jackson had to say about his guys going mano a mano.
The thing that I like is a different schedule today for them. You know, that we came in early, we had our walkthroughs at normal time, and then there was a lull, you know, in the day. So I really talked to them last night about their process because hopefully someday we're a team that are playing Monday night games, more Thursday night games, more Sunday, you know, early evening games because we're becoming a really good football team. You just never know how that's going to happen. So you got to handle all the things that can happen in a National Football League.
All right, Matt, let's start with this on the padded practice. How important is it to become a team, I think, is really because now you're hitting each other every day. It's not just, you know, flag football. It's brutal football.
Absolutely. There's an amount of trust that can be earned when you're playing physically and also you're playing in those live scenarios because you truly don't understand exactly what it's going to look like either as a player or a coach if it's not live. But when it does, you can see the fits. And I know that in Nathan's case, Nathan's going to be where Nathan needs to be. And I think that's the trust that is earned when you can liven up those periods that siren goes off. And it's the best and closest thing we can get to actual football on Sundays.
And not only that, yesterday we talked with the director of pro personnel, Dan Sagne, and the vice president of player personnel, Andrew Berry. And I said, how good is it for you guys who watch the tape of practice when you're making evaluations, trying to go from 90 to 75, ultimately to 53, to get to see real football be played and have evaluations based on real football? And they said, it's huge for them. They've never seen a camp this physical that's also provided them so much evaluative tape.
What are the pros and cons on being this physical then?
Well, the pros are you're much more ready when it does go live in the preseason and it also when the season actually starts. The con is the injuries, you know, losing some of your best players in those live scenarios. Bodies are on the ground. You'll roll some ankles, you'll roll some knees. So that's why if these guys can learn to practice as professionals, you can essentially go live without going to the ground.
I've been saying this too, that Hugh Jackson's in a unique position because he's got such a young team. It's his first year here. He's building it. And I don't know that he'll have this kind of an opportunity to mold a team as early, you know, when you move on, because you'll have your core set moving forward with the veterans.
Absolutely, and that's what's so huge about this. He's got an opportunity to set the tone, change the culture of the Browns, and he's doing that. We've never seen a training camp like this, and I think it's great, and it's going to carry forward next year that this is the expectation, and when the new rookie class comes in, these 14 guys that were drafted this year will be like, look, this is how it's done here with the Cleveland Browns.
All right, the next step for the Browns, obviously on Friday night in Green Bay for the first preseason game of the year. So it's 7 o'clock on Friday. We're going to give you a chance to kind of ramp up for the game on Friday night. Here's a sneak peek at building the Browns.
We wanted to find men who would have an opportunity to come into our organization and not just add on the football field, but also add to the organization, that they would be good players, but good people.
A toughness, both a physical but also a mental toughness, a desire to compete.
Guys who are willing to work and be part of our Cleveland Brown family.
And building the Browns really gives you a chance to see things that you'll never see while you're here at training camp or throughout the season.
Oh, it takes you back through the construction of this roster, the draft process and everything with Sashi Brown, the collaborative process that arrived at the 14 guys, plus one Jamar Taylor, who has been a nice acquisition as well in the 7th round on draft day.
It definitely has, and that's part of the process that I love to see. You know, it starts as 90. How do we get to that 90 number, then down to 75, then down to 53? And that's for those people who have come to training camp. They're rooting for some players. They're rooting for some guys that people don't even know who are playing very well right now. You follow them throughout those four preseason games and you know, and hope and plead that they make that final 53.
All right, we're talking about some of those names when we come back. We're going to take a look inside the linebacker competition. What's going on at what these guys have said so far is one of the strongest places in camp positionally. So we'll talk linebackers when we come back on Dog Pound Report live on News Channel 5. Well, the Browns have today off, but Dog Pound Report never, ever, ever sleeps.
Never.
Let's dive back into this team as we get ready for Friday night's game against Green Bay. And let's talk about the difference between a first-year player and a second-year player. When I say that to you, what do you think, Nathan?
Well, the rookies got to come in, and they have a lot to learn. And when we bring those second-year players, as we have Duke Johnson's been in there with us, Cam Irving, they talk about it's night and day. The game has slowed down for them. They understand what they're supposed to do. So now they're focused on playing and playing fast, whereas last year they were doing a lot of thinking out
there. Absolutely. And I think more so than anything, they've learned to become a pro. They have learned from the guys before them. And I really feel like they've settled in, and now they get to, you know, to really dive in and understand these schemes and go out and show off and really pin their ears back and show off their athletic ability.
Two of those guys, Nate Orchard, Xavier Cooper. Here's a chance to catch up with them.
I guess you could call the three amigos. I texted Nate and Danny before we came to camp, and I told them, let's do it, man. We got the opportunity. We trained in, you know, in San Diego before the combine together, and we kind of built that, you know, relationship. And now, you know, look at, we're here today, so, which is a blessing. And I think if all of us play at a really high level, we got a chance to be really good.
And that's why they brought us here. We need to continue that here, especially with Danny. We want to do some great things up front and really set the tone and make a statement and be the great defense we know we can be.
Matt, how does a coaching change affect a player going from first year to second year? Because in essence, it's their third coach in 3 years when you go back to college.
It's tough. And I think, you know, but when you hire the right guy that second time, you realize very quickly what the NFL or what your first year might have or should have looked at. And I think Hugh came in and he set his ground rules. He has over-communicated to these players exactly what he wants and exactly what you need to do to become a Cleveland Brown. And I think four guys who are motivated to play and to be the core of what this team becomes, as you look at Shelton and Cooper and Duke Johnson, Cam Irving, Randall Telfer's a guy who's going to compete, who was drafted last year. Those guys can buy into Hugh very quickly and just slowly show him over time that I get the scheme and I'm working each and every day to become a Cleveland Brown and the core of who we are.
You know, it's amazing when you look at these second-year guys from a year ago. The first six picks in that draft, Danny Shelton, Cam Irving, Nate Orchard, you got Xavier Cooper, Duke Johnson, and, of course, Ibrahim Campbell, all look like they're going to start. Yep. Six second-year starters, and a lot of that has to do with what Hugh Jackson has done in the right development, the position coaches getting these guys ready, and then the injury to Dez Bryant opening the way for Xavier Cooper, who on Friday night at the goal line blew up two plays when they tried to run it in there and get physical, which was good to see. Nate Orchard yesterday, another sack. He has really improved and shown the ability to get to the quarterback.
I think another point here, too, especially when you're going through transition, is that when you hire a coach right away and you know who your head coach is going to be immediately following the season, it gives you a chance to get to your assistant coaches faster, which gives you a chance to get to your players faster, which makes the transition a little bit easier. A guy who was all over the offensive line last year but now has his spot at center, that's Cam Irving. He didn't participate yesterday, but he's looking forward to a great season.
He's on to it. He's really starting to master the mental part of it. He's doing a great job on the field. He's adapting to the techniques because it's a completely different thing. The one thing that he'll always have to be is going to have to be a great leverage player because you don't have many 6'5" centers in the league. But he does have the ability to bend, so he's making good progress.
All right, that's offensive line coach Hal Hunter. For Cam Irving, I think it's got to be nice just from say, I know what I'm playing today.
Yeah, this is the position he played in college. He was an All-American in that last year there at Florida State, and it's a position he was drafted to play. I mean, that was a succession plan by that front office for Alex Mack's departure. You've got Cam Irving. He looks more comfortable. The technique is more familiar to him, and I think he's off to a good start. They're very pleased with what they've seen from him. He's been consistent, and I'm told that he'll be back out there this week, so the left arm injury, not a big deal.
Absolutely. And the one thing that helps Cam Irving each and every day, and you heard Hal Hunter pointed out, is he's a tall guy. He's a long-legged guy. Practicing it against a guy in Danny Shelton, 6', 335 pounds, it forces Cam Irving to create that leverage and to become a dominant physical center in this division.
All right, where are we with the right tackle situation right now? Because it's a little bit up in the air.
It is. It started off with Alvin Bailey. They've started to move him inside now, and the guy who's worked with the first team 3 days in a row now, Spencer Drango, the fifth-round pick out of Baylor. And people say, well, he was a fifth-round pick. Listen, the guy was a two-time All-American. He was the Big 12 Offensive Lineman of the Year. Didn't give up a single sack last year at Baylor in the Big 12, which, when you think about it, is pretty remarkable. He's come out, impressed the coaches with his physicality, his length. They want him to get stronger, and I think if he does that, this is a guy they're looking at as a potential tackle for a long time, not to mention Sean Coleman, who's kind of easing his way back, who was the third-round pick to play that tackle position.
All right, Matt, I'll get your thoughts on this in a second. Here's what Hal Hunter had to say about the right tackle position.
But I anticipate that it'll be a battle today, tomorrow, a month from now, 2 months from now. It's always going to be a battle because you got two talented guys lining up at the same position. They're very competitive and very tough, and they want that position. So I'm anticipating that it's going to be a battle here, and it's going to be a close one, and let the best man win.
I'll be honest, Matt, this is what makes camp fun, when you see a spot that's up for grabs.
It does. I have no problem with, at this point in camp, there being a competition here at right tackle. We've talked, there's going to be a competition at wide receiver, there's going to be a competition at corner. It's a survival of the fittest mentality, and I think Hugh Jackson is pushing these guys to the limit. He's giving everyone the opportunity to get one reps, to get two reps, and prove to these coaches and Hugh themselves that they deserve to start on this offensive line.
All right, we're going to look into our crystal ball a little bit later in the show. We'll talk about what the 53-man roster might look like. And there's a surprise name at tight end that we weren't talking about when the season started, but man, he's making a name for himself. We'll explain to you who that is coming up. Welcome back to Dog Pound Report, live from Berea here on News Channel 5. And the Browns will be going to Green Bay later this week. Any recommendations for eating there while we're there?
Not so much eating, but if you can, and if you are a football fan, even though you may be a part of the dog pound, do your best to take just a tour of Lambeau Field. I mean, they've decked this place out. They've done renovation after renovation. The season ticket list is still 75 years long, I'm sorry. But it's just take it all in, and that's something that I did when I first walked those halls as a player when I first got signed there, is just to understand the number of trophies and what Vince Lombardi and, I mean, gosh, the trophy is named after their coach. Yeah. I mean, the history, it's where it all really started.
And Johnny Holland, a linebacker coach here for the Browns, is going to be an interesting week for him as well.
Yeah, he's in the Packers Hall of Fame, one of the best at the linebacker position.
All right, so we had a chance to catch up with him, not about the Packers, but about the Browns. And DeMario Davis, the free agent linebacker that came to us from the Jets in the offseason, his thoughts on his impact for the season.
He's a natural leader. You know, one thing that DeMario does, he leads by example. He knows how to motivate guys and bring guys along. He's not a leader that beat guys down, but when he has to stand up and make a point, he can get his point across. And, you know, like I said, we're very excited about DeMario, and I think he has the potential to be one of the top linebackers in the NFL.
Well, while RG3 was the big free agent signing, DeMario Davis was a nice acquisition in the offseason.
Absolutely. I love this guy, and I think the Dog Pound's going to love him as well because he's physical and tough and relentless, and he's the kind of guy you need to be that big thumper in this 3-4.
He absolutely was, and I thought at times last year, you know, Danny Shelton, the man in the middle, did his best on game day to get everybody hyped up, and in some cases, he's just the young pup. DeMario Davis has been there and done that, especially in a very aggressive Jets defense. We bring him in. He will be the core. And as Johnny Holland said, it's not only going to be his words, but his action and physicality on the football field.
All right, Dominique Alexander is another name you may not have heard about when it comes to the Browns, and we had a chance to talk to Johnny Holland about him and his impact, and he might be a name you're going to want to look for on Friday night.
I watched Dominique, a lot of film of Dominique as a player, as college video, and he has some assets, some qualities as a player that's hard to coach. You know, he's instinctive, he's a quick guy. Dominique is a little smaller as most linebackers, but Dominique has the ability to run, cover ground, he can cover, and he's a smart guy. So, you know, he has a bright future.
All right, we heard Johnny talk about the reasons why he jumps off the page. Why is he jumping off the page for you?
He's athletic, and I think, as Johnny Holland said, he watched a lot of his college tape, and a lot of that was big-time college football. The kid was at Oklahoma. I think he started 36 of 38 games at Oklahoma. You know, on that stage, if he can do it, he can do it at this level. And I think there's a bit of a logjam at backup linebacker, whereas we heard DeMario Davis is going to start and be the alpha in the middle. Christian Kirksey will be the weak inside. But you've got Tank Carter, you've got Scooby Wright, you've got Justin Tuggle, and Dominique Alexander. All really four guys really fighting for two spots. So I look to nights like Friday night, yesterday, did they execute? And then each and every preseason game, there's not one rep they can take off because there's two guys that are going to make this football team an inside linebacker, and there's four fighting right now.
I know when the Browns made their last pick in the draft in the seventh round, it was Scooby Wright. So they were looking at that inside linebacker position, and guess what? Then they went out and got Dominique Alexander. I think there was probably a debate at the time. They went with Scooby, but made sure they got their guy in undrafted free agency. And you talked about the battle. Right now the second team's Tank Carter, and next to him is Justin Tuggle. But it's looking like, to me, Scooby Wright and Dominique Alexander are going to be very tough to keep off of this football team.
Yeah, and one other point to be taken yesterday that I pointed out, you know, via our broadcast is Christian Kirksey and Scooby Wright together. Were on the Brown defense together taking all those defensive reps yesterday.
All right, so things changed back to the way they used to be with Ray Horton here as the defensive coordinator, and Holland talked about going back to this 3-4 defense with Ray Horton coming back to Cleveland.
And Ray Horton, you know, he's one of the best defensive coordinators I've been around. And as far as the scheme that we have right now, that it's going to be an aggressive scheme, that we're going to attack the run, and we're going to attack the quarterback, and we're going to put pressure on the offense. So I think when you do that and guys play aggressive, it carries into the running game.
Ray Horton gets to finish what he started, I think, especially with some guys still on the roster here from when he was here. Your thoughts on Ray Horton?
You know, I think it's good to be back. I think he understands how important football is to the city of Cleveland. I think he wanted this opportunity to come back and finish, as you said, what he started. And from a defensive standpoint, he puts a lot of stress on the opposing quarterback. We talked about it yesterday. We saw safety blitzes. We saw nickel blitzes. We saw double A-gap pressure. We saw them bluff and then pull out of that to try to confuse in third and long situations. So it's a defense that's going to keep quarterbacks guessing because, as you know, when you have a good quarterback and he knows what you're going to do pre-snap, it's too easy for them. Ray Horton tries to make it tough.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, this camp has really been an offensive camp, you know, minus maybe Friday night when the defense came out and set the tone. And a lot of that's going to be taken in for granted because Ray Horton has probably not dug into his bag of tricks the way Ray Horton will once the season starts. And I think he's going to have to, you know, have the collar really tight on some of those linebackers as RG3 and Josh McCown take those reps at center. You've got Duke and Crow at running back. And so there's on some of the blitzes, you can't bring it the way you're going to bring it once the preseason and regular season starts. So I think Ray Horton knows and he's very confident with exactly where this defense stands right now.
All right, Matt, we'll talk to you soon. And we'll bring in Andrew Gribble. The Mad Scribble is going to join us next right here on Dog Pound Report. Plus, we are going to introduce you to our newest reporter on Dog Pound Report. You will not want to miss the hard-hitting questions coming up from Lily Wolf. Well, it's quiet here in Berea, but on Friday night, things were jumping. Probably the biggest, best crowd, I would say, of training camp so far here on Friday night, and it was a lot of fun. We bring in Andrew Gribble. He is the Mad Scribble, and he is from ClevelandBrowns.com. I'll tell you, Friday night was outstanding, and I think one of the reasons why was to watch RG3 and Corey Coleman hook up, because that was fun.
Well, they didn't waste any time either. It was the second play. I think fans were kind of building here. They had about 30, 35 minutes of warm-ups, and then right away RG3 hits Corey Coleman down on kind of a double move. Just the way Corey Coleman, he just gets space, and he makes the most of it. He always seems like he gets the ball when it comes his way. Just a great performance, and it really excited a good crowd, like you said. I think the fact that it was in the evening on a Friday night just had a really good atmosphere here. It was good to be a part of it, and then following up yesterday, just good back-to-back days for Browns fans.
And Hugh Jackson was very excited about his top pick, Corey Coleman, after practice on Friday.
You know, he's not doing anything that I'm surprised of. I mean, I said it before, that's why we draft him. He's a tremendous, talented young man, and he's got some growing to do. There's some things he's got to clean up and continue to get better at, but he always finds a way to make a play, you know, and that's what you're looking for in a guy that has the opportunity to score the football like he does. And there are some other guys, you know, obviously in order for him to catch those balls, there's some good protection going on, there's a good ball thrown, and he's able to make some plays. So he's just got to continue to do that, and that's something that, you know, we're counting on. But at the same time, there's a whole lot that goes into that.
Nathan, when you watch Corey Coleman, you forget he's a rookie sometimes. I know I do when I watch him.
I think he's one of the best players on the field already, and it's crazy to say, but this is a guy who has exceeded expectations in the sense they knew he was going to be good, Grims, but I don't even know if they knew at this point he would be as good as he looks. Now, we haven't played real football, but this is a guy who creates separation, as you said, vertical speed, can take the top off of a defense, makes contested catches, is aggressive at the catch point, and has that attitude, that desire to win. Multiple players on this team have told me they think we have the next Steve Smith, and they mean that with the highest praise possible as it relates to Corey Coleman, who has been flat-out sensational. Everybody who came out here Friday night left saying, wow, Corey Coleman is legit.
And the thing I like, too, is the rare times you kind of see him make a mistake or not line up correctly, Hugh Jackson is right on top of him. And I think we saw that in his press conference quotes, too. You know, he's trying to get the hype train a little bit, keep it in the station a little bit with Corey Coleman, because you don't want it to get ahead of itself. You don't want people to come out and be disappointed if he opens the season with something like 6 catches for 50 yards. I think, you know, he's still a rookie, and I think they're coaching him like that. But I think when you hear Coleman talk, he's not someone that's kind of, enjoying his own praise. I think he's working hard. That's why all of his practices, he's kind of built off them. You really haven't seen a bad practice.
It wasn't like the second touchdown, too, on Friday night, RG3. That wasn't the tightest of passes. I mean, he had to make hay.
On a veteran, Tremont Williams, a veteran. Yeah.
It was impressive.
Nice little veteran push off that I think he got away with, that he knows he did, but I think the officials didn't see it, and that's all that matters.
Gribbs, so how do we look on the depth chart then for the other wide receivers as we, you know, go towards Friday night?
It's crowded, and it's a good problem to have after a couple of years of just not having too much reliable depth at that position. And I think you have to start with Corey Coleman, and then you guys talked earlier, Terrell Pryor is having a great camp, has great size, and really has looked the part of an NFL wide receiver. You look at a veteran like Andrew Hawkins, who's been on the sidelines the last couple days, but you figure he's going to have a really good role in the slot. And then you look at three other receivers that you drafted, Rashard Higgins, Ricardo Lewis, Jordan Payton. That makes the decision even tougher. Darius Jennings, Ronnell Hall, they're having good camps as well. And then the X factor is always going to be Marlon Moore, the value that he brings to special teams, especially after you lost Johnson Badamosi last year. So it's a tough decision. I expect it to be on the high end, maybe 7, maybe try to squeeze 8 on the 53. But and then that decision gets even more difficult week 5. might be bringing back Josh Gordon for that game.
And we didn't even talk about Taylor Gabriel, who's been here for a couple of years, who's coming on very strong, having a good camp as well. This is the best wide receiving group I've seen since I've been here with the Cleveland Browns. They're winning every day in the one-on-ones. They're winning every day in the 11-on-11s. They look good. This is the one area where I'm glad I'm not Sasha and company, because I imagine these are going to be heated discussions. These are going to be tough discussions, because at the end of the day, you can't carry eight wide receivers. So maybe you can get to seven. Maybe, but it's probably going to be around six when you're looking at putting this 53 together. And there are great players that will not be able to make this football team just from a number standpoint, something we've not said at all in relation to wide receivers lately.
All right, you've talked wide receivers. We haven't even talked about tight ends. Greg Seaman, the tight ends coach, has got his hands full too, because, you know, it might be obvious with Gary Barnage, but after that, it's a tight race with some guys that look really good.
What we have at my position really is Gary and the kids. There are five of them, and they've not, or five or six of them, and none of them have really played. Some haven't played at all. And so we are giving everybody an opportunity to play different positions within the tight end group through camp here. And it'll play itself out as we go through the preseason. There are jobs available.
How do we look at the tight end position after Gary Barnage? And just think about it. A year ago, Gary Barnage was that other guy. Now, who will be the other guy or guys?
I think it's going to be, again, another tough discussion. You got Randall Telfer, you drafted in the sixth round, reportedly the best blocking tight end, but he's been dinged up last year and dinged up missing some time again. You've got E.J. Bibbs, who's shown great hands, had a very good camp thus far, is versatile, can play some fullback for you as well. And then there's Connor Hamlin, who's kind of come out of nowhere, catching everything, making plays day after day in that live situation, a beautiful catch on the red zone on a play-action pass from RG3 for a touchdown. And we haven't even seen Seth DeValve yet. So it's an interesting room right now.
Yeah, the interesting dynamic is, again, I think when we get to see more Gary Barnage on the field, then you might see the true how you're going to use this number two tight end. I think that's the key, because through the first week of camp, we've really just seen kind of Connor Hamlin working with that first team offense in Gary Barnage's spot. We know Barnage is going to be there. So it's all about who complements Barnage the best, I think, within this offense. I think Bibbs brings an interesting element because you can move him back to kind of that fullback tight end position. He's a little bit more versatile. Maybe that's what Seth DeValve does when he gets back. But again, you got to be on the field and have to compete. And the guy, I even see J.P. Holtz making a bunch of catches on the field. I mean, they're finding ways to get tight ends involved in this offense. And it's been encouraging to see that they make the most of this opportunity with Barnage on the sidelines.
Who is Connor Hamlin, though?
He is a big fellow from Oregon State, 6'7". E.J. Bibbs was on the show. He's like, this guy is humongous. And so far, he's caught everything thrown his way. It's not pretty. When you watch Connor Hamlin run, it's not necessarily a smooth, elegant thing of beauty, but he finds a way to get open, and he catches everything. He has a huge catch radius and has done a great job, especially in the red zone. And you think about this team. We saw yesterday with Terrell Pryor a jump ball. You could have Josh Gordon out there. You could have Terrell Pryor out there. Barnage. You could have Hamlin out there. And all of a sudden, we can play basketball near the red zone, which is something we couldn't do last year.
The guy's an authoritative touchdown spike, too.
Oh,
it's great
strong.
To see.
All right. We've got plenty more to come on Dog Pound Report. We're going to come back live here to Brian. We're going to introduce you to our newest reporter. Stand by. She asks the hard-hitting questions. That's next on Dog Pound Report.
Hello, Cleveland. My name is Lily Wolf. What is your name?
My name is Cameron Irvin. Nice to meet you.
It is a pleasure to meet you, sir. I have some questions to ask you.
Let's go for it.
Okay. Who inspired you when you were younger?
My parents. Both of them worked really hard, and they always inspired me to be great.
Other than football, what did you do in high school?
I played basketball, and I also ran track.
Who's your favorite singer?
Rihanna.
Can you sing one of her songs for me?
Work, 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 work.
What's your all-time favorite movie?
Ooh. Friday Night Lights.
Mm. Other than work, do you have any hobbies?
I like to relax, play video games, go to the movies sometimes, batting cages, stuff like that.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Thank you for asking my questions. I mean, answering.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me on here.
And let's bring in our junior reporter, Lily Wolf. Lily, you drove all the way up from Michigan for this job. This has got to be an exciting thrill for you. Tell me how you like being the junior reporter.
I thought it was really fun. It was a really exciting experience.
So coming from Michigan, how did you guys end up Browns fans?
Well, we've been raised to be Browns fans from our family. Thank Lord.
Why is that? Why are your parents Browns fans?
Well, they came from around that area.
Okay.
All right. So you have been embedded into the Browns since day one. What's your first Browns memory? Can you remember? Is it just your dad yelling at you on Sunday saying, "We got to get in the end zone"?
Yeah. Well, we go to Lodo's. It's a place where we have this like our own Browns backers club. And probably one of my earliest memories of watching the Browns is going to that place.
Very cool. Very cool. So who's your favorite Browns player? Is it Cam Irving now that you got a chance to sit down and talk to him?
He's a nice guy. He seems really intimidating on the field, but he's actually a really nice guy. But I like all of them because I don't really watch football. It's just the family thing.
What was it like to interview him, though? You didn't look nervous, but were you nervous at all?
I was really nervous, but it was really fun.
Were you surprised when he started singing? Did you think you were going to be able to get him to sing?
That was funny. I thought it was cool. I didn't know that he'd like that song, but now I do.
What was your favorite question that you asked him?
One of my favorite questions was actually that question, can you sing?
Does this, you look like a pro now. Is this something you want to do when you grow up?
I also want to be an actor and maybe a singer, but I think this would be one of my choices.
You want to be a singer. Who's your favorite artist?
Well, there's one of my favorite songs. It's by the Zombies. It's an old band, and I like to sing some of their songs.
Nice.
Lily,
what
grade are you?
I'm going in the fifth.
Okay, so when you go back to school and your friends say, what'd you do for the summer, are you going to say, I'm a junior reporter for the Browns, and how did that happen?
I went to, it's like this Comic-Con except for the Browns, and we went to this place and you got to do a bunch of cool games, but there was this junior reporter thing, so I went up there, they asked me questions, and I answered them.
Did you want to go up there? Did your parents push you up there, or how did you?
I wanted to go up there and try it.
That was, of course, Fan Fest. Did you have a good time at Cleveland Browns Fan Fest?
Oh, it was really fun. We got to do a bunch of different games, there was food, it was really fun.
Did you get to meet any of the players when you were there?
No.
No.
And you're in Michigan, but what is it like to actually be in Berea, be at Brown Stadium?
It's really awesome.
But you're in Michigan. I mean, it's got to be tough to be a Browns fan in Michigan, isn't it? A little bit.
Yeah. Most of our school loves Michigan or Michigan State. Actually, I have a best friend, and she's an Ohio State fan. So they like all that stuff, and she's one of my best friends, so I think that's pretty cool.
All right, so we got to see Cam Irving. Who's next? Do we know who's next on your list, or is there somebody you want to interview?
I honestly don't care. I mean...
As long as you get the opportunity to hold that mic, right?
Yep, as long as I get the opportunity.
If you got to ask head coach Hugh Jackson one question, what would you ask him?
I'd ask him, I actually don't know.
That's funny. We do the same thing every
week.
All right, Lily, first of all, I want to congratulate you on being the junior reporter. And more than that, I want to congratulate your family for living in Michigan and not only being a Browns fan, but being an Ohio State fan, too. That's, you got that going for you.
Yeah.
Patience is going to be rewarded with the Browns, Lily. Your family's struggles and travails, it's going to start paying off.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
All right, anybody you want to say hi to before we go?
Hi, my fellow Browns Backers fans. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. And hi, Luke. And hi, Isabel.
There you go. Lily, stealing the show. Thank you. We'll see you on the show very soon, and we'll see you on the scoreboard throughout the home games at Browns Stadium, or at First Energy Stadium, I should say. All right, we'll be back. We'll come back. We're going to talk about the running back situation, and Lily's probably going to run the rest of the show anyway. So hopefully we'll be here when we get back. Well, the wide receivers have stole the show over the last couple days, but the running backs will have a huge importance into what's going to happen this season. Welcome back to Dog Pound Report. Andrew Gribble down there. Nathan Zagura right here. You know, we have spent a lot of time talking about the wide receivers. Let's talk about the running back situation for a second here, and let's bring in Kirby Wilson, the running back coach for the Cleveland Browns, to let us know exactly what's going on, especially when it comes to trying to get the starting spot.
Yeah, he's very explosive. He's got all the tools. He's going to be a special player this year. Along with that, he's got a great work ethic. And we're really pleased at how he's working at his trade. And every day it's an interview for him. And he's going out and doing a fabulous job for us.
And, of course, talking about Isaiah Crowell right there. Your thoughts on the running backs?
First of all, Isaiah Crowell, I think, is coming in the best shape of his career and has had the best camp of his career. And I know that they believe in him as one of those guys who can be an elite-level talent. They believe the same thing with Duke Johnson. And yesterday during the Orange and Brown scrimmage, we were talking about in those goal line situations. Matt Wilhelm goes, just imagine if they motion Duke Johnson out of the backfield. What are they going to do? Well, we saw that RG3 hit him for that touchdown on that option route near the goal line. A great call by Mr. Wilhelm, as per usual. But this is a running back duo that I think is going to be very productive in this offense. They're going to lean on him. Friday night, though, they got near the goal line. They wanted to run it in, and the defense won that battle. Hugh Jackson was not happy about it, says they got to be more physical at the point of attack. But I think ultimately we are going to be a good running football team.
To their defense on Friday night, there was a couple linemen that probably wouldn't be on the goal line when it's a real games get started. But, you know, that's something that they have to push forward through. I think we talked a lot the last couple days about the passing game in this offense and Corey Coleman-Troper. I think people may be overlooking how important running the football is going to be for this team, just because in those scrimmage situations, you want to pass the ball as much as you can, get those guys acquainted with it, and running plays can lead to more injuries. So I think once we see the preseason, regular season get started, I think this is going to be a run-heavy offense with Isaiah Crowell leading the way.
And it's not going to be a run-heavy offense like it was perhaps in years past where it was a lineup and run. You're going to see a lot of stuff out of shotgun, and we saw yesterday a two-play sequence that I really think stood out. It was a run-pass option for RG3 out of the shotgun. The first time, faked the inside handoff, decided to keep it, and hit Gary Barnage right down the seam. Second time, they ran the exact same action, but this time he held it in there, gave it to Crow. The middle parted, and he had about a 30-yard scamper right up the middle, untouched. So I think it's going to be an effective game that's going to be built around some of the things they can do with Robert Griffin III, a quarterback.
Real quick, I just want to talk about RG3, the runner. I saw a couple plays yesterday with that. Your thoughts on him being able to move the ball as a runner?
He certainly hasn't lost that athletic ability, and I think the key thing for him is managing those runs and knowing when to slide, knowing when to leave the pocket. I think he was maybe doing that a little bit too much early in his career. Picking his spots, because I think when you pick the spots and have that same athleticism, it is totally dangerous and keeps the defense on its heels.
And one of the things it does, and man, I talked about this yesterday, it's difficult to play man-to-man coverage without a spy against Robert Griffin III on third and long, because if you do that and leave him unaccounted for and he sees the scene we saw yesterday, he can get 20 yards in the blink of an eye and extend drives.
All right, I've got a couple more quarterback questions for you. We'll bring those up when we come back on Dog Pound Report live from Berea. Again, a quiet day here in Berea with no practice, but that doesn't mean you can't be here tomorrow and Tuesday, 3 o'clock, practice time for you as training camp rolls on here from Berea. And the fans, again, on Friday night were amazing, and hopefully we get some more of that good weather, good energy, and no more rain, man. Forget about these rain at training camp. I mean,
yeah,
that wasn't fun for the fans or anybody early on. All right, let's talk about the offense in general, and what have you seen from not only RG3, but also from Josh McCown, as both guys have run the offense over the last couple days?
Well, I think this is the first time in a long time that the offense has been the better side of the football thus far in training camp. And we'll talk about RG3. Yesterday, three possessions in the Orange and Brown scrimmage, a field goal, and two touchdowns. He's been nothing short, in my opinion, of a guy who looks like he should be named the starter and named the starter soon, because he has yet to turn the ball over in training camp. He's taking care of it, looks very comfortable in the pocket, making good decisions. He's accurate down the field. He's making big plays. RG3's done, I think, everything that he has been asked to do and more. And I think overall, it's just been a very strong showing for the offense, especially throwing the football.
I think the thing that stuck out to me, too, is Hugh Jackson made a point that they were installing this whole offense within the first week of camp. And from what I'm seeing, they're not stopping practice much to yell at guys for bus. I feel like they've embraced kind of what this offense is. I bet it's pretty complex, probably more complex than what they were running last year with formations, bunching guys on the outside. I've seen Robert Griffin III handle it a lot better than he was at OTAs, and he just seems comfortable within the offense, much like Josh McCown was in OTAs, because, you know, he's been around the NFL a lot. He's seen a lot of offenses. Now Robert Griffin III looks like a guy who's going to command this offense.
All right, might be quiet, but the drum line's behind us, so they're getting their work in. I just want to ask you, normally, and you brought this up, normally the defense is ahead of the offense, but what I saw on Friday night, I thought the offense seemed to be in sync too. I don't know if the defense is holding back or not. Is that true?
I think the defense came out and made a statement early in that. They had a couple of stops, didn't let up points get on the board, I think the first four possessions, and then RG3 got a little bit hot with Corey Coleman on the one down to the goal line, then hit Hamlet for the touchdown, and then Coleman for the touchdown. But it's an offensive head coach, and I don't know how much of a factor that is, but I just think we're more talented than we're accustomed to seeing in Cleveland Browns uniforms on the offensive side of the ball.
And I'll say, I've been pleasantly surprised with the front seven, especially after losing Desmond Bryant. John Hughes hasn't been in practice the last couple days for personal reasons. I think they've played pretty solidly. You're very good in the middle with Danny Shelton at nose guard, the inside linebackers, Demario Davis and Chris Kirksey. I just think the question marks are going to be in the secondary, and we may not have answers to that until the season starts.
All right, we come back. We'll answer the question, who's the starting quarterback going to be on Friday night, and how soon are we going to find out? That's coming up on Dog Pound Report. Well, when we're sitting here 1 week from today, we'll be talking about the Browns and what they did against the Packers, and I'm really looking forward to it. We'll bring Matt Willem back in as well. Naming a starter, is there anybody up here that doesn't think that RG3 is not going to be the starter on Friday night? Anybody?
No.
Anybody?
No.
We're all unanimous.
Decision may come tomorrow.
Tomorrow is when we think it's going to happen. Why is RG3 the starter? What has he done to prove that he needs to be the starter?
Well, I think Nathan pointed it out very clearly. You know, he has not given the football to the other team. I think he's been judicious on when he actually does take off and run. As we saw both here in Berea, he'll throw it into your backyard. Yesterday in the horseshoe, he'll throw it into, like, the C deck. So he's learning the proper techniques and the principles that Hugh Jackson is asking of a starting quarterback, and he's gone out there and done that each and every day.
Gribbs, what's impressed you about RG3?
He just keeps getting better, and I think that we know his ceiling is so high as an NFL quarterback. We saw it in his rookie year, and I think he's gotten over what happened last year in Washington and continued to get better. It may not have looked great in May, but it's gotten better as camp has gone on, and what we saw it Friday and Saturday, that was a great deep ball. Runs the offense well.
What will you be looking for on RG3 on Friday?
I want to see continued progress. He's playing his best football every day he goes out there, and I want to see him continue to take care of the football. I want to see against another opponent where he can get hit, quick decisions, comfort in the pocket, delivering the football accurately. And if we see that, I really think RG3, you know, when you came in, it was kind of like, what do we have here? Starting to get excited that this could be a guy that maybe could be around for a while here with the Browns, and we'll start to see that against other teams starting on Friday.
Gribbs, what do the Browns need to accomplish on Friday night for this first preseason game?
Well, you just want to have solid series with the first team offense, but really what we saw last year and what you're going to continue to see, second and third teamers have a huge opportunity to impress. The first guys are not going to play as much, so for them to make the opportunity is going to be great.
Matt, can you play the bass drum or not? Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
No, I'm excited. I mean, again, the players might be off, but the practice never stops here in Berea.
What are you looking forward out of Green Bay on Friday night?
I just want to see execution. I want to see this team stay healthy more than anything. I want to see how the defense looks, and I want to see who are those guys that we talked about at the bottom quarter of the roster that step up and make plays and catch the attention of the coaches and the staff, personnel department.
When it comes to the first preseason game, how do you judge what you're seeing out of the ground up against another team?
You're getting a lot of twos and threes, so I think I would expect RG3 and the starting defense, along with the offense, to go out there and look and play a clean game. But then the twos and threes, I don't want to see a significant drop-off after those starters are done.
Same with you?
Yeah. Whatever he said.
What did he say? I don't know what he said. We got the band going. We're ready to go. Obviously, it's time to start playing some football. Let's go.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. You guys rocked out. We appreciate it. Drumline here, too. Hey, let's talk about what's coming up on Friday night, then. While you're watching here on News Channel 5, of course, we'll have Building the Browns. That is at 7, so make sure you watch for that. The pregame show is at 7:30, and we'll have you covered on everything you need. Looking forward to bringing you the game, first preseason game of the year, on Friday night. And then don't forget, we've got the postgame show as well following on News Channel 5. And, of course, that'll be right after the game. That's why it's called the postgame show. All right, guys, thank you very much. Appreciate it. We'll do it next week. Sure. I'm looking forward to actually talking about a game. But
football,
it's been
time.
A good week at camp, and I think we're all looking forward to it. All right, thank you for watching Dog Pound Report right here on News Channel 5. We'll see you next Sunday, and don't forget, on Friday night as well.